workers and reopen those stores.
Yeah, because again, I mean, and we've talked about it so much on this show, right? But our labor laws are only as important as they are enforced, right?
Yeah.
We can have them say anything that we want, but if they aren't actually being enforced, then they really have no power, right?
Yeah.
And that's when we talk about the power of the executive branch, right? Like Trump replacing lots of people, Biden putting people back who kind of more are labor, pro-labor aligned. So, you know, the NLRB, while it's always using the same rules to dictate it, how it's interpreted and what they chase is really dependent on the executive branch and the kind of the state of the people and kind of what's important in culture. And for us right now, you know, there is this gigantic movement. And so this could be a huge, a huge push, right? This is one of the companies that held out the longest, right?
Absolutely.
Of all these companies. So I think it could, we'll keep an eye on it.
Yeah. Like it is, and Starbucks is a company that everyone deals with in every facet of American life. Like they're everywhere. So it could be a major impact if the NLRB forces, like requires this to happen. So yeah, as you said, we will keep an eye on this. Obviously, there's some time before the ruling will be held down in, or you know, given down in August. But we will obviously touch on this subject again as it develops. We are out of time. Thank you so much for listening to Labor Radio on KBOO. I am Michael Cathcart.
And I'm Elliot Gilland.
Have a great night.
Host of Democracy Now!, you're listening to KBOO 90.7 FM.
Baby, you understand me now. If sometimes you see that I'm mad, don't you know no one alive can always be an angel? When everything goes wrong, you see some bad. But I'm just a soul whose intentions are good. Oh, Lord, please don't let me be misunderstood.
Good evening. You're listening to Prison Pipeline here on KBOO Community Radio. And tonight we're doing a show with an adult in custody.
Hi, my name's Bobby Benford, and I'm 65 years old, and I've been in prison for 51 years. I've started out as a juvenile, and I've been on your program before, and I talked about how I came back and got into the system. I came from the poverty, we're fruit pickers, I'm a Native American. And breed, and so I'm a Yaki from the Yaki tribe. And so my family, we moved around a lot, and my dad didn't have an education, and my mom didn't either, and he just came from the Korean War. I got judged, you might say, as a being an incorrigible. That means my parents couldn't handle me. I was acting up in school and helped some friend of mine run away from home, and they sent me to a place, a diagnostic center called Cascadia, for a six-week evaluation. And they sent me back to the court, and under a court order, I was sent to the juvenile institution. I was in Cedar Creek Youth Camp, and I ran away from Cedar Creek Youth Camp. They brought me back. They sent me into Green Hill, and I lived a block and a half from Green Hill. My parents did. I escaped for 20 minutes out of the maximum security unit there, and they sent me to prison for that as a juvenile. So I started out as just being incorrigible, basically violating a court order, and I'm the first juvenile in the state of Washington to be sent to prison for second degree escape, and I'm in the law books for that. So I was they gave me a 5-year maximum, and I escaped again, and I had the violation. So on a 5-year maximum as a juvenile from 1972 to 1981, I did 4 years for running away from Green. Hill for 20 minutes. Then I escaped again, and I became a three striker because I'd go out and I'd rob banks. Kind of made an identity out of it. You know, they talk about this brain science, and I was in juvenile institution, and actually I had some meals, I had my own clothes, I had a radio, something different than living in a shack picking fruit with my parents, and so I made an identity out of prison. And this was in the 70s when there was high violence, and I just saw a psychiatrist yesterday, and he said, "No doubt you have PTSD because in this prison, the environment, there was a murder here on the average of once a week in Walla Walla. And Monroe Formatory, I was involved in three riots where 300 people clashed together and with knives and swords and hammers and pipes. And there were race riots. And the National Guard came in and surrounded the place. And they took hostages. And Governor Dixie Lee Ray gave everybody amnesty, and there's some pretty horrific stuff happening. Well, I was picked up by these old lifers and kind of schooled a little bit, and so I made an identity out of prison. I thought this was who I was, and in that 23 years, I was a boxer. They had a boxing ring in there. They'd take us out for fights. It was like 53 days a year to go out on furlough. So you go out on a furlough Friday and you come back on Monday, and that was life in the big house. So there was a lot of high level of violence, high level of stress. There was, it's a lot different than what the prisons are now. Nowadays, the prisons, they have the police youngsters that came up from this cocaine epidemic that happened, and so a lot of the gangs took over the drug trade, and I mean, you see it on TV, on some of the shows on TV, Snowfall, things like that. Probably pretty accurate, but I'm just judging from inside, because you know, I've only been out like 8 months since 19, so 51 years.
You're listening to KBOO Community Radio. This is Prison Pipeline, and we're talking with Bobby Benford, an adult in custody at the Washington State Correctional Facility in Walla Walla, Washington. Go ahead, Bobby.
Okay, so I spent a life in prison, you know, and I started on my 51st year. It's the first time I've ever been out to a medium custody facility. You know, since 95, I've probably done 9 years in isolation. So, I'm not new to the violence or some of the things that go on in the prison nowadays. Well, back when I started, the guys got to grow their beards, we got to wear our own clothes. They were being pretty from the totalium ring. The pendulum swung over to rehabilitation, and the people in charge down in Olympia, I think they gave us everything. I know the superintendent, you know, we booed him off in the 80s, and people used to come up to the penitentiary to cop their heroin from China White. They used to have a guy in here that the bikers and the lifers were fighting, and the bikers used to run the place, but then the lifers got up and just started killing the bikers and told them, "You guys ain't Dooley Squad here no more. We're running this." And it was a pretty intense situation, even with the administration. They were back in then. I think there's a book on Cooler Than Unusual that kind of explains it pretty good as far as what the administration. It only takes you so far. But to not get off the subject or to make a point, I just wanted to make the groundwork of how I was living and what I grew up in and the environment that, as a young man, being in this prison environment, I made an identity. I thought that's who I was. I thought I was this convict. I've always paid my bills. I've never told on anybody. I've always rode my own beast. And I'm always looking a way to escape. So being a serial bank robber. My last robbery was in 1995. I robbed like 20 banks in 3 months. My wife thought I was a construction worker, and I was doing them from banks from King County. I was doing them all Smoky Point, all the banks, all the way down to Edmonds, Washington, from Lake Stevens all the way down there. And then I went down, and we did a, me and my partner did a bank in South Hill, Peoria. And they put a tracking device in, and we threw it out the window too long because we were checking our money. It was in the second getaway car. The they've set a roadblock up on us. There's a cop trailing us, and they tried to do a felony pullover, and that's when I floored it and stuck the gun out the window and shot three cop cars off the road, broke the partial roadblock, and got away from spotter airplanes, helicopters, and I wound up getting out of the dragnet there and wound up at Friendly Clyde's Tavern. And I called my wife up to work for the University of Western Hospital, and she came and picked me up, and I went out to her car, and I said, "Well, look, honey, man, I wasn't the construction worker you thought I was," and I pulled all these headlines out of these banks that I robbed. So now I'm sitting in prison since 1995 after that 8 month break, and I'm doing 6 life without parole. So that's 999 years, 99 months, and 99 day sentences. I have 6 of those. I got life without parole for bank robbery, 3 first degree assaults. I got life without parole for car theft, and I got life without parole for felony loan because they all had gun enhancements to it. So I've been living in here in the prison and being an activist. And I wound up in the hole for, I did a 3-year program in the hole, and then they said I got out, or while I was in the intensive management unit, which is highly restricted back then. Didn't have a TV or a radio. Instead, somehow I got on a DOC computer and miraculously gave myself minimum custody and got sent they put me back in after 11 days for another 18 months for escape and introduction to contraband and institution. So I did another 18 months.
So here we are. We're talking with Bobby Binford. Bobby is an adult in custody at Walla Walla in Washington State, and is just talking to us today about kind of, life inside, some of the hardships he's had to endure and some of the reasons that he's inside, and he just wants to tell us about some good stuff that's going on that he's doing, good stuff he's working on right now. So
okay, so after getting the idea that somehow these problems ain't working out, I signed up for a number one, this is the first program, and it's called Prison Fellowship Academy, and it's an actual program. The first class, we start out with a class of 40 men, and we're down to 24 right now, and it's by a man named John Tank, and he's for Prison Fellowship. It's an academy, and it's the nation's largest Christian nonprofit serving prisoners and former prisoners, and they're leading advocate for criminal justice reform. And they have us memorize the mission statement. And the mission of the Prison Fellowship Academy is to create opportunities for men and women in prison to practice and develop the values that transform them and others into good citizens. And our creed is better than yesterday, then everybody jumps in and says, not done yet. Well, what makes Prison Fellowship and John with the glory of God behind him to help to become men, to create a set of values that we go by, which is the community, productivity, affirmation, restoration, integrity, and responsibility. These are the values that we're learning, and it's a 14-month class. So when we sign up for it, we're in there for 14 months, and I think we're about 3/4 of the way through. And it's agreed that the hearts and the uniqueness of the community is in this unit, because we all move to a a unit here, which is in the medium facility, and what we have here is that we have a community of men that are together that somehow, you know, took these walls that separate us up into a community. So we're not saying this is your shower, that's your table, this is our area, or this gang, or anything. We're a part of a group.
You have
of
1 minute left. I have 1 minute left.
And it looks like I'm going to have to call you back.
You may start the conversation now.
I'd like to continue on and talk about John Tank that is our facilitator, and I've gotten really close with John, and, you know, the prison fellowship's bigger than all of us. It's bigger than these things. Well, we're living in a community right now. Change our hearts, change our attitudes, change our values, and he's not, even though it's a Christian-based group, they're setting the values out there, but they're not, you know, it's not a Bible study or like that. There's a spirit in that class that moves all of us. And there's a question that I had to ask myself is, why have I been living this life of a criminal all this time? And it's evident to me that my actions have no place in society. All my memories are fading to remember. This has basically been my life. And you might say, hey, well, you're institutionalized. I don't think so. I think I have a vision and a value of life. Even though I understand that I've done a crime and I've owned it right here to the public, but I've also owned it in my heart and changed my heart, my mind. I've changed my values. I'm able to do a lot of things for these guys here. Again, I run a reentry program here. I'm on a student body council. I graduated with an associate arts degree in business, and I'm working on a BA. You might say, oh, that's kind of a waste. You know, you ain't never getting out. Well, here's the thing. 2 weeks ago, I got diagnosed with Barrett's esophagus. It's a form of cancer that's formed in me. So my days, instead of acting like I want to snivel around and a loser, my days are more precious to me. I have a son that's 50 years old. I just had a powwow come up with my grandkids. I dress them all in grass dance traditional outfits, and me and the youngsters went out there and danced. I have a friend named Aaron Jones that lives in Vancouver. She's master's degree in sociology, and she's a good friend, and so we've talked. I've even set up my clemency and made a run at that, but I got in a wreck with some new guard that came in, and he wanted to call me a rat, so I reacted to that, and so I got an infraction for my reaction to my court hearings. And so my attorneys in the Seattle Clemency Project dropped me. They said, all right, you're on your own. I said, well, wait a minute. I'm challenging this in court because they don't have evidence. He dated me like that, and he's a new guy. They said, well, wait, we're going to send your stuff back to you. And they got a hold of me and talked about the clemency. So I'm able to deal with that in my life, and plus I'm able to accept what life's offered to me right now at this moment. I don't have my problems in my past and my future. What I'm concerned is helping people to love myself, to love others, to love all things, and to love the great mystery, the God and the great mystery that's all around me, the spirit of life. And these are the things that I'm brought to the surface of my life and I'm aware of dealing with John. As far as my giving up or anything, I've not given up. I've not given up on life. There's a Celebrate Recovery, which has to do with drug addicts and alcoholics, and a lady by the name of Chris comes in, and she's part of the prison fellowship. It's a part of the program, too. So what I'm doing is doing offering and giving back instead of taking all my life, because I get an opportunity to give back. And that's building relationships and caring for others. And that's using my time and energy constructively. It's recognizing others' worths and strengths and achievements. seeking and promoting reconciliation and knowing and doing the right thing. So that's my integrity, most of all, and owning my actions and committing to change. I can change right here. I can live life right here. There's no reason for me to just be an old sourpuss, you know, and go around and be grumpy. And I've changed my heart and changed my mind. And look, I'm not saying this for, I have no shot at clemency. I have no shot at ever getting out. I'm a condemned man. I have a 3-strike sentence. So I'm just dealing with what's in my heart. I'm taking the things that the knowledge that I have. I'm formulating a thought. I'm running it through my spirit, through my heart, and then back out into this world. And I want to leave a legacy of being a person that's words good, that has values. My son came up and he wants me out there and raise my grandkids. I have great grandkids. Got one granddaughter is doing so good in school. She's 18 years old. I have granddaughters that are 28, and I have great grandkids. So it's, even though, you know, I'm in a book called Gladiator School. I'm written me up in that book there too. This guy named Thornton wrote the book, and I'm in that book. I'm a little familiar with the history of Washington State, and I talk to people and I tell these stories just like this psychologist had me hemmed up yesterday. I was telling him, yeah, I'm a little stressed out, and here's what's going on. And I talked to him for an hour, and he was pretty interested in the things I've done. And people tell me, hey, Bob, you're not like, you know, you're not like a guy that's given up. And it's important for me to use what life I have right now in a good way, to come in a good way, to help some of these youngsters that are coming in here, to help them get their reentry programs. Because some, a lot of them, like you'll see with James that wants to talk to you, he's met me, because I'm also the resolution specialist, so I help them solve their problems in here before they have a requisite staff, and it's informally done. So I got to have respect. My word's got to be good. I ain't the eyes and the ears, or I'm not running around being a rat for the institution or anything like that. But I am a service to these men, and I help them with their legal stuff. I help them with their family stuff. I help them with the things that I really wasn't all that good at getting with myself. It seems like we always know the other guy more than we know ourselves. But I feel like I'm in a mirror, and I see a lot of these guys. I know their dads. I remember their dads when they were in here. And now they're coming in. These are their kids that are coming in. All with respect to my tribe. I run a sweat lodge. I'm a pipe carrier. So my integrity and these values is that when I pass this stuff on to the next generation, that I'm not passing on BS to the next generation. That what I have to pass on is real. It's about them. It takes their mind somewhere and drops them off. It gives them in touch with their heart. It helps them take that journey within themselves to see that all these things in this world are inside them, and in a good way, how they can deal with it, how they become better men, how they can, you know, how they can get respect and get them out of this madness. Right now, Washington State prisons are changing.
Thank you. We're talking today with Bobby Binford. He's a man of Native American heritage who's serving multiple life sentences in Walla Walla. And Bobby, we've got about 5 minutes left, so it might be time to start sort of heading towards wrapping up the show. So any points that you still want to make, now would be a good time to start making them.
Well, I'd like to reach out and to people out there in the world and maybe create a dialogue with the people in the community. Therefore, I'm open for writing letters. Remember, I'm an activist, I'm not looking for a girlfriend. I'm not looking for, you know, but I'm looking for people that would like to learn a little bit more about this environment and be a part of the change, be a part of what's going on here, be a part of fellowship to come in as volunteers to give these people, give these brothers a chance to go into the community on an even run. Not just with enough money and prison clothes what do? They have little or no things to go for. I've mentored guys that go out and they started halfway houses and they've called me and said, "Hey, Bob, yeah, you're welcome to get out here. We'll give you a job and everything like that." And I've co-signed people and said, just like I've co-signed people and said, "Look, tell your story. Your story is important. The most important about your story is the legacy you leave. The legacy you leave after, sure, you got in here and it's messed up." I have these guys getting on my J-tape and saying, "Hey, thanks for being my friend, Bob." And these are young men that's lived with me. This has been an environment that I taught them spiritual things. I give them a little bit chance to see a little bit more of themselves. And I highly suggest, though, that they get a hold of Prison Fellowship Academy and look at what we have going on here. We have a good day and it's happening. How it's benefited for me is I'm able to help other people that are at misfortune and got wrapped up with the criminal justice system for whatever reasons they've done. I like to give back spiritually. I like to give back with my values. I like to give back with what's real in life and not this big old dream about incarceration, because that's changing too. These guys are going to, we need these guys out there in the workforce. We need their families, need them. Their families need them now. And to help them make that reentry, they got a lot of programs and a lot of things for that. That's where my heart's at right now. That's where my heart is as far as getting myself through this experience in a good way. Remembered as a good person as I go, even though I'm a condemned man doing a condemned sentence in a world that's turned upside down for me. I've straightened it out. I've straightened myself out. And it's my goal and my mission to create those opportunities with our men and women that are in prison and to practice and develop the values to transform them and others into good citizens. That's where I'm at right now, Emma. So that's basically it right there. And I send my love out to the world. I know I'm doing the right thing now. Even though it doesn't seem like it might be too late, it's never too late to be a human being. And that's the part of life that I'm getting connected to. You can judge the outer person, but my spirit and my soul is private. You can just judge the outer. And if you judge me, you're just judging just more about yourself than about me. So with that, I just like to offer a little love to everybody in the world. Put some good feelings and good positive energy out, Emma. I'd like to thank you for listening to me.
Thank you. We've been talking today with Bobby Benford. Bobby's an inmate, an adult in custody in the Washington State prison system. And he's been sharing with us his story about all the good things that he's learned and stuff that he wanted to share with us. Bobby, thank you so much for joining us on Prison Pipeline.
You bet. Thank you very much. And may God bless you and everybody else out there.
Hi, this is Emma. I am a co-host, and I'm also the current president of the board of directors here at KABU. At KABU, we prove every day that people-powered radio has the ability to bring us together across distances and give us hope when we feel despair. Your friends at KABU want to remind you that generosity has the same power. Join thousands of KABU supporters from all around the world, and let's rally together to build stronger communities. If you can, just go to kboo.fm/give or text KBOO to this number 44321. And thanks so much for your support of KBOO Community Radio.
Baby, you understand me now. if sometimes you see that I'm mad. Don't you know no one alive can always be an angel? When everything goes wrong, you see some bad. But I'm just a soul whose intentions are good. Oh, Lord, please don't let me be
listening to KBOO Portland on 90.7 FM, K282BH Philomath on 104.3 FM, and K220HR Hood River on 91.9 FM.
KBOO Community Radio is listener sponsored. That's right, 80% of our funding comes from donations from listeners just like you. You can always make a donation to help keep KBOO colorful, independent, and non-commercial at kboo.fm/give. But right now, during our end-of-the-year campaign, is the perfect time to contribute. Give now and help us to reach our goal of $75,000 by December 31st. Be a ray of light in your community by making your tax-deductible donation at kboo.fm/give today.